Coming up on Windows Weekly, Microsoft Managed Desktop is here, much to the chagrin of resellers and IT pros. Dynamics 365 now with more mixed reality. Paul gets grumpy about email. Mary Jo explains last week's cloud outage and so much more. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. This is Windows Weekly with Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott. Episode number 587, recorded Wednesday, September 19th, 2018. Is it baked yet? This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days. While you shop, it's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. Welcome to Windows Weekly. This is the show where we talk about all things Microsoft, all the Windows announcements. There's some exciting ones today. And of course, I am joined, as per the usual, by Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott. Or wait, I did that wrong. Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott. It felt right. Paul, Mary Jo, thanks so much for joining us on your show.
Hey, thanks.
Thurrott.com.
All things Thurrott.com.
All things Thurrott.com. And ZD Mary Jo Foley. How are you guys doing?
I like your laptop.
Oh, thank you. Brand new. I don't know if you can see that. It's some running.
Is that one of the new Surfaces that's going to come out on October 2nd? You have the fake one?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's real. It's running all the Windows. Lots of Windows here.
All your Windows right where you left them.
Right where I left them.
This is a terrible insight into how I deal with children, but I this laptop reminds me of a pumpkin that a kid made one time that's a daughter of a friend of ours. And she said, "What do you think?" And it was this misshapen mess. And I said, "I think you should marry Rich."
Oh. How old was she?
She was a teenager.
Oh, okay.
And she's even cruel to children.
Yeah.
Yep. Cruel to children. Paul Thurrott story.
Right, because pumpkin carving is something that really can take you really far in the world, I found.
Sure.
Okay, so there's some, I guess, bad news. Microsoft Managed Desktop, the rumors are true.
Yep. That guy from Forbes was right.
He was. Curse him. No, it's not, you know, so this is funny. We talked about this on Windows Weekly a few weeks ago because I had a bunch of rumors based on a name of a product that Brad found called the Microsoft Managed Desktop. And yeah, where is he? Where's Brad? There he is.
Hi, Brad.
It's like if he sees the shadow, is this show going to last another 7 years? Well, how does this work?
It might. Yeah. Brad Groundhog Sams. yeah. So this week, Microsoft, and so this is weird. They announced it this week. I kind of thought this might be one of the announcements for Ignite because I was like, you know what? This is right up the alley of, you know, Ignite, IT pros. That's a big audience next week. And instead, they announced it this week. It's exactly what we thought it was. It's an optional service for business customers only, where Microsoft becomes your IT pro, basically. So Microsoft takes over the management of your Windows 10 desktop. They're going to sell you the hardware. They're going to automatically provision it. It's going to be running Microsoft 365 Enterprise. They're going to keep you up to date with patches, both feature updates, patches, fixes, the whole thing. And you can kind of sit back in your chair and put your feet up if you're an IT pro, at least in theory. The first hardware it's going to work with the Surfaces. And they have said they are going to also offer this with machines from people like HP, Lenovo and Dell, which is very interesting because HP and Dell, I don't know if Lenovo does this, offer a very similar service on themselves. Like they do this kind of end-to-end management of Windows 10 machines too. But it's not exactly clear how some of these finer points are going to work. You know, like how, if say you want a Dell machine, do you buy it from Dell? I think you buy it from Microsoft, who will get it from Dell, but it, you know, there are all these kind of little pieces that are still a bit unclear on the strategy. It's also unclear how resellers fit in, because a lot of Microsoft's resellers, you know, their systems integrators and VARs and all that, they do this as a business. Like, this is their full-time business. They configure and purchase and set up your PC for you. And so as soon as this story came out, people were like, I thought your story must be wrong, because they're going head-to-head with their channel. And that's a big no-no. But when I asked Bill Karagiannis, who is the one in charge of this program, that, he said, that guy, Bill Kay, who used to be Donna Sarkar's boss and headed up the Windows Insider program and also was the head of Windows Fundamentals. Remember, like 2 years ago, he just kind of disappeared, and they said, he's doing some enterprise thing, but we can't tell you what it is. Well, this is what it is. I asked him about the conflict in the channel, and he said, we are going to be working with resellers, and we're going to work so that they can still add value. And I think he told me bill the customer and be the one kind of who is the one billing the customer. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works. And I also heard from some IT pros who said, I don't like this. You're taking away my job, basically, if my company says, you know what, we want Microsoft to manage our desktops. So what am I going to do? I know.
McDonald's awaits. No, this is like the move to cloud computing. This is the same argument.
It is.
You know, I used to be an exchange administrator, and now you're telling me we're going to use Office 365. You're taking away my job, you know?
Yep.
Unfortunately for those people, this industry evolves really quickly, and I see this as a natural extension of Office 365 to Microsoft 365 to the offering you're talking about today, the managed desktop.
Microsoft Managed Desktop, MMD, for those in the know.
I like how Peter Bright described it in Ars Technica. It's subscription software running on subscriptions, subscription hardware running subscription software with subscription management.
Yeah, basically. It's like you're quote, renting everything, right? The hardware, the software, and the services. Holy, you're doing trendy, like the whole thing.
Yeah.
So the way this is going to roll out is there are a few customers who already are doing this with Microsoft. They're pilot users. And the next group of people who are going to get this are in the US and the UK. Microsoft's already saying, if you're in those two areas and you are interested in this, reach out to your local account managers and talk to them about it. Then in 2019, or the early part of 2019, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, after that, other countries will also get the option to go MMD.
But what's the question, of course, is how much is this going to cost?
Good question. There is no, like everything in the enterprise, there's no set fee, right? So if you're a company who says to Microsoft, hey, we want 10,000 desktops on this, you're going to get a better price than somebody who says, hey, we want 100 desktops, right? And it's also going to depend which kind of laptop or desktop that you buy. So, you know, if you buy a Surface, you're going to pay a certain price. If you buy something from HP, you're going to pay a different price. So there, I haven't heard any even ballpark, like it's going to cost between this and that. It's totally volume-based. It's totally, you know, there's going to be volume discounts. There's going to be a lot of ways to drop the price if you're a company big enough and in the position to do that.
Does it make sense for smaller companies, like someone with 100 desktops, does it make sense for them to be managed this way, or would they be better served with like an in-house IT staff?
It depends.
It does. Right? It does depend.
One thing I will say is Mary Jo and I talked about this privately, and
oh, you guys talk privately without me?
Yeah. Sorry.
Sometimes.
Actually, we recorded an entire podcast without you. No, we were just talking about this. And I said, you know, I sort of saw this as originally as something that would be something that bigger companies would like more. And Mary Jo said, well, I don't really see it that way. I see it as kind of a thing for smaller companies. And actually, I think that's the more correct path, because bigger companies already have these IT infrastructures, right? And if, you know, those people are afraid about losing their jobs, I think they might have other possibilities within the same company or some other company doing the same thing. But there is this thing about, you know, smaller companies becoming bigger and how do you address their emerging needs as those companies grow. And I think when we look forward to today, like a lot of established companies have these IT groups and giant teams and all kinds of infrastructure. I don't think that's going to be the case for most of the companies that are coming up in the world today. And I think this speaks to that group, you know. Mm-hmm. Microsoft obviously offers hybrid solutions as well, and they're really big on that kind of thing. And that's a great message for today's enterprise because they are maybe still a little bit scared about pure cloud or not able to do pure cloud. But for a lot of emerging companies, I mean, this is, how do you make that jump from we're 10 people and we just do ad hoc to now we need what? We have to hire somebody who's going to service us from the vertical industry. I mean, like, how do you even handle that kind of thing? And I think for a lot of those companies, those growing companies, hearing that Microsoft does this is like, yeah, okay, there you go. Assuming it makes sense financially, et cetera, et cetera. Like, Office 365 to me is like a no-brainer. Microsoft 365, I'm a little less sure about the no-brandedness of that or whatever, but assuming that it is the same value or the same type of value, I think it could make tons of sense.
Also, I think, you know, the bar keeps moving for what you as an IT pro are supposed to be doing, right? Like, I remember when cloud computing first became a thing, people were freaking out. They were like, wait, like my job is going away. And instead what it was your job is changing, right? And in fact, when they announced this Microsoft Managed Desktop, their rationale about why are we doing this, it was because more and more companies need people who know things about the business that their company is in, like very specific vertical expertise. They don't really need people to necessarily just always be like provisioning Windows 10, updating it, the feature updates. You know, that's what people are used to doing who are IT pros, but it's probably not very fun doing that for multiple companies, you know, multiple users in a large organization. Like, wouldn't you rather do something a little more creative, something a little more kind of that would give you job security, you know? So I see what Microsoft's argument is in this, and I more understand the angst by resellers than I do by IT pros on this one. Mm-hmm. I mean, but again, right. You can make the same argument with resellers. You could say, well, you know what? You guys used to do some very basic things as a reseller that Microsoft increasingly kind of encroached into and started doing themselves, you know, like things like Exchange threat protection. Like some people made an entire business out of that as a reseller, and then Microsoft started doing it as part of Exchange. And resellers were like, well, that's what I was doing. But it's like they're pushing you up the stack along with them. And I guess it's like move or die. I mean, not to be a downer, which I am, but.
that relates to the Exchange comment I made earlier. I mean, you know, I think people get a little comfortable sometimes. And the Exchange example was, you know, we went from 2003 to 2007 to 2010. Mm-hmm. There were all kinds of challenges involved, but it was, you know, it was this on-prem kind of a deal. And then eventually Exchange Online happened. And I already forgot the name of it, the predecessor of Office 365, and then Office 365. Mm-hmm. And at some point, your migration job is to, you're kind of migrating yourself out of a job. You know, it's awful. I don't mean to laugh about it, but I mean, it's I think people sometimes forget that it has, you know, our industry has been like this forever. You know, it's just, I think things maybe were a little too stable in a way for a while. And that applies to these resellers, partners and so forth. You know, they base their business around a certain thing. You know, there was probably, there was a whole business around small business server at one point, or whole little mini industry. That product doesn't exist anymore for the most part, right? It just doesn't make sense today. That's what happens.
I mean, not to kind of belittle what this is for people who are IT pros, but it's the same for us in our field too. Like, we're not just sitting back going, oh, you guys, you know, deal with it. I mean, both Paul and I have been journalists a long time, and I can tell you it's scary for us too, as our field has changed and things that we're being required to do that we didn't used to have to do. I mean, I used to just write print articles. I never used to have to do like podcasts or, you know, go on camera. I never even thought I would ever have to do that as part of my career. And I may not have even become a journalist if I thought that was something I was going to have to do, to be
frank.
I don't
think this was even conceivable back in the 80s or 90s. You know, you know, we joke about this. We mentioned, you know, Forbes or whatever, and the terrible headlines, and you know, all the stuff you kind of have to deal with. You know, you referenced, I think, a headline, I think it was before the show started, and it might have even been from a mainstream, like, I think it was from CNBC.
No, I think it was MarketWatch, actually.
Okay, but sort of a clickbaity kind of a, you know, a deal. And it's something I struggle with, you know, personally. Like, I've written my share of clickbaity headlines, but there's a big difference between clickbaity with no payoff and clickbaity with, I want you to read the article. There's something here, you know. When you're just... anyway, it doesn't matter. But it's just like she said, it's very interesting how quickly this has changed. And it is thanks to technology. So it's kind of a, you know, it's a nice bit of irony for her and I, and for others like us, I guess.
I feel like you're implying that you don't enjoy being on camera and doing podcasts, Mary Jo.
I hate it, to be honest. Well, I feel like it's something you have to do to be in this field anymore. You know?
Yeah, we are, as writers, most of us are not comfortable in crowds or out in public or on a stage or whatever. And
in small, dark
rooms.
No, it's
true. Rooms. I mean, there's a reason I work by myself in a room, you know. I mean, the only living creature that comes through here beside me is my cat, you know. And it's like, I do best this way. And I assume that's true of Mary Jo as well. I mean, it's a struggle, you know. And so, I mean, some people... You run into people occasionally who are like really natural out doing this kind of stuff. And we hate those people. No, I mean, they're just different. I mean, everyone's different. But I think most people, especially not people who get into this today, like a lot of people who might be doing what we're doing today would just go straight to YouTube or something. And those people need to have that kind of presence and ability to do, and desire to do that kind of thing. And it's just not, I just can't wrap my head around it.
Yeah. Well, then we appreciate both of you even more doing this thing.
You have no idea the sweat that is pouring off my body right now.
So, I mean, is there the blog post, the marketing post from Microsoft talks about analytics. They can leverage analytics to provide operational and security insights and learnings, blah, blah, blah. Like, do you think that, I mean, that sounds like a real benefit, or is that just me like drinking the Kool-Aid from Microsoft?
No, I think for a lot of IT orgs, you know, they would love to get that kind of analytics sent to them and have it accessible to them in a way that they don't have to set it up themselves. And the other part of the equation that I think will be even bigger for some companies is Microsoft's doing your security monitoring for you. So, you know, they always talk about, we have all these data centers and, you know, we have all this capability to be watching our own network 24/7 and making sure no, you know, threat attempts happen or malware, ransomware, blah, blah, blah. So they're going to sell this as, what if we could do that for you and you didn't have to do that for yourself? And we look how big we are and look how many people we have dedicated to doing this. So wouldn't you want us to do that for you? So I think that'll be an even more compelling reason that some people might consider this.
I mean, the three kind of parts of this, I mean, one is just the element of trust. And I think Microsoft has that. Keep raising the Exchange example from before, but you know, who is better qualified to manage Exchange than the guy who's managing Exchange at your company? Maybe the guys that made Exchange, you know, there's kind of something to that. But I think the third bit, though, it comes back to the question I asked first about this, which is just the cost. And by cost, I really mean the value. So you'd kind of said, am I drinking the Kool-Aid? This sounds like it would be valuable. And I agree, but it depends on, you know, what the price is and what the realized benefits are too. Because in addition to the stuff that Microsoft's talking about, you know, one of the potential benefits of this is, what if your IT organization is able to turn into that thing it's supposedly always wanted to be, which is a proactive force for change and not something that's constantly reacting to problems? You know, maybe by freeing up these resources to let Microsoft handle that stuff, what the remaining people, or the people still there doing IT who might have different types of jobs now, can focus on other parts of the organization where you can make change for good inside your organization, right? To do the things that would really benefit your users in other areas. So you never know. I mean, this is a lot of questions. I just don't, you can't even say if any of this makes sense until you know what the actual cost is going to be.
It's true. And you know what else I wonder? It's not listed as part of this program, but I wonder if there'll be a financing component, right?
Yep.
Will there be something maybe not for the biggest enterprises, but like for smaller companies, if they try to attract them with this service, you know, hey, we'll also offer you some kind of a financing deal too, if you are interested in getting into this. They did that with Surface.
Right. So in other words, Surface Plus, if I understand it correctly, is and was a 2-year commitment, right? Mm-hmm. It might make sense. Did they say what the term is for this kind of thing? Was it 3 years or more?
3 years.
Three years. Okay. I actually think that makes more sense. It helps spread out the cost of the device over a long period of time, so the monthly payment will be less. Mm-hmm. And it makes it more affordable. It's also, you know, it has all those things businesses want. You know, it's a predictable thing that's on a regular basis. It's good for Microsoft too on that note. But, you know, it's just like buying an iPhone today. Rich Woods wrote something about this today. I wrote something about this the other day. You know, remember when an iPhone was like $299? It wasn't really $299 because you had your carrier payments and all that kind of stuff. But the reality is, you know, like $1,099 for like a reasonable iPhone XS or whatever is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also fair to say for a lot of people, because they sell tens of millions of these things every quarter, by the way, if you can make that thing cost $35 a month, I think a lot of people see the value in that sort of thing. Obviously, mm-hmm. they do. I don't think most people are walking into an Apple store with $1,000 and saying, here, I'm paying for this out of my pocket. You know, I think they're financing it in some way.
That's what Leo does, but nobody else, I don't
it's
think.
It's what makes America great. Something.
So is it time to check the oven and see if the newest version of Windows is all baked?
Yeah. So this actually just happened yesterday. It seems like it was a long time ago. You know, for the past several builds of Windows 10, I'm going to look at my article. My face is lighting up because I just want to make sure I get the language right. Donna Sakar had used the language that said, just because the watermark's not on the desktop doesn't mean anything. We're not done yet. And this build, it's the build that came out yesterday, it says the build watermark at the lower right-hand corner of the desktop is no longer present in this build. This doesn't mean we're done. Doesn't mean we're done. You know, it's like kind of why would you reward that? You literally use the same language. So actually there were a couple of known features, issues rather, in this build. And people kind of point to that and say, well, maybe that doesn't mean this is the final build. But known issues can be fixed easily and not outside of a new build of Windows 10. Like this is Microsoft always ships a cumulative update immediately when this thing goes out into the world. Could certainly be part of that. I think we're getting to the point now. It's the third week of September. This is actually later in the process than I would have thought this would have happened. But I bet if you went back a year ago, maybe we should. It was probably around the same time, actually. I don't know why. I feel like every version of Windows 10, I always think it's going to be like a month ahead. And I know we discussed this on the show back in early April. I'm losing my mind. Early August, I sort of said like, I kind of feel like this is it. Like it's, you know, it's wrapping up. And after I said that, they did ship a couple of minor new things. But we've had weeks and weeks now of no new features, right? Nothing. And we've also had a couple of builds where there were no known issues. Although, again, this one introduced a couple. So, you know, we're guessing or guesstimating or whatever. But obviously, this thing is on the verge of being completed, right? As much as something like this can be completed.
I wonder if they're going to even tell us when it RTM, when it's RTM, as we keep calling it.
Never, you know? Never.
No, they never do. And then the other question I've had, like for the past few times, is I know we used to care about this a lot in covering Windows in the past because that was much more momentous then. It was like there was a new version of Windows every 3 years. This is when Windows goes to OEMs. It's like, okay, this is a milestone. But now it's like, okay, they pick a version and they say, this is RTM. And I mean, they don't tell us that, but they say it internally, like this is the one we're going to use as the thing that we move forward from. But we're still,
but they incremented.
Obsessed.
It's electronic, and it's hard to move past this. Was it Windows Vista where they actually had a helicopter come down to the campus, and they gave the guy the gold masters, and they took off in the helicopter so it could go back to?
Oh man, remember that.
Think it was like Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer and Jim Altshin were in. You know, they had a crowd outside. I think so. I think that was it. But
wow,
The world has changed slightly. referencing our previous story. And these things happen electronically. Software is infinitely fixable now. And so you hope that what they ship is not garbage. But if there are problems, they're easily fixed and will be fixed before anyone has this code in hand, either via upgrading or via buying a new computer. So, yeah, I don't know why we obsess over this.
I know.
But I'm gonna
we all do, it. Though. It's hard not to. It's like, you are like, is this RTM? You know, like, we all get crazy over it. And I'm like, but who cares? You know?
Yeah, right.
We need our little fun, our little jollies. I guess that's why we keep doing it. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it is twice a year. You're right. I mean, so in the average span of a new version of Windows, this is literally happening at six times the rate. It makes it less special for sure. You know, the names are stupid now. It's, you know, I don't know. But I still think it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Should we talk about this ad that Microsoft pulled?
Yeah.
So I've already lost track of the timing on this. It might have been Friday of last week. Does that sound right? Or Thursday? They released a new build of Windows 10, again, with no new features and no known issues to the fast ring. And if you used Microsoft Edge to go to firefox.com or google.com/Chrome and clicked on the download button, this kind of obnoxious advertisement for Edge would pop up. That Microsoft has done, or Windows 10 does have other ads for Edge in Windows 10. When you go to change the default browser, for example, but this one was happening at download time, like literally when you click the download link. And so it's kind of an aggressive new stance on this thing, which a lot of people kind of don't like. There is a running gag about Edge that the only reason anyone uses it is to download the browser they actually want to use. But it's really not much of a gag. Like, you know, Edge only has 4% market share. I mean, usage share. It's not that many people use it. And obviously Microsoft knows this. And so how do you prevent that? I don't know. I guess you make a better browser. But one of the ways too is you put these things up in front of people. Are you sure you want to do that? And you know, as I usually do, I handled this with grace and calmness and patience. And many other people overreacted, but since then they've released a new build, the one we were just discussing. And actually, this build no longer has that behavior.
Can I ask you a crazy thing about this? So. Mm-hmm. I don't think this was just in the Insider build, because I have the Surface Go, and I decided finally I had it with Edge because it's so terrible with JavaScript heavy sites like TweetDeck, which I live in. So I switched off of Windows 10 S, went to home mode. First thing I did was download Chrome. Right. And I believe I got this same pop-up. And just because I was like, oh, brother, I was just like, no, install anyway, click. I didn't really dwell on it or like obsess over it, because I was like, yeah, I get what they're trying to do, but no. And I'm like, wait, I think they were testing this more than just the Insider build. I think I don't know if it was the Edge team, you know, like it could have been a different team at Microsoft who just said,
as the show was starting, I wanted to look at the weather, and I opened the weather app in Windows 10. This is on RS5 or 1809. And instead of the weather app coming up, what I got was a full page ad for the news app on Android and iOS. Mm. Right. And at first I thought, I don't really like this kind of thing, but yeah, you know, okay, I guess I could kind of see it. But then I realized I'm looking at the weather app. I didn't load the news app. It wasn't like, hey, we see you're using news. Maybe you want to use it on mobile too. Like, I think I might have given that one a pass. But when I realized it was weather, it was like a different app. And I was like, oh, what the hell? Like, what is this? Crazy. So I posted a picture of it on Twitter, whatever. I know I overreact to everything, but like I said, they have various ways of advertising Edge when using a different browser. There are the things that slide over from the side and they go into Action Center. There's the thing you see in the Settings app. This thing with the download link is something new. I don't know if they were, you know, using it on non-Insider builds. I will say that it's possible you could have seen something very much like it. So even if they aren't, this is something heavy-handed. And that's the dark side of this little victory, because that thing is not in the new build, but all the other awfulness is still in there. So, you know, they just keep, they keep pushing and they keep pushing and they keep pushing. And I just don't see this ending. And so it's still an escalation. Yes, I'm glad they listened, because lots of people complained and they should. because this behavior is terrible, but it doesn't remove all the other terribleness for sure. And, you know, that stuff's still there.
Yeah. I don't know. I have to guess that they're getting good results on this. Otherwise, why do they keep doing it? You know,
like spam callers probably get good results too. Is this the model? Like, you know, like
I'm not saying I think it's robo-call. A good model, but something has to be reinforcing their belief that this is a good way to try to get people to try stuff.
So with my advanced degrees in psychology, I've often said, but I've always felt that this is one of those things that is in the back of your mind. It's just like a little negative notch, another one and another one. And that each one of these steps is part of an experience that people will over time feel is overwhelmingly negative. And that the time comes to buy a little Susie, a computer for school, or get a second computer for themselves for the, you know, you put out in the den when you're watching TV or whatever. And that's when they go like, you know what? I heard Chromebooks weren't annoying and they're like $200. Or I can afford it and I see the value in spending $1,000 to $2,000 on a MacBook because I know Apple's not going to do this crap and I've heard that these things just work. And it doesn't actually matter how true those things are. Yeah. I think that Microsoft is eating away at a big chunk of the user base that exists today and is thus ruining the chances of getting those people and their kids and whoever else they influence in the future. And I just see this as a net negative. No one wants to be annoyed.
You know what? We have to put this as a reminder in Cortana. When we get Chris Capasola, on the show this year, let's ask him about this because
I'm sure put it in Cortana. We actually want to get this reminder. So
that's true. okay, maybe Alexa. Anyway, I think we should ask him because I think it would be really, really interesting to hear his perspective and maybe a little insight into the telemetry and what they found and why they keep doing this. Let's ask him.
Yeah. I mean, I'm literally that neighbor who is overly sensitive to sounds and dogs barking and blah, blah, blah. But there's still sort of an early warning trigger that occurs with me. I feel like I saw this stuff in Windows 8 and I called it a slippery slope. And I was like, once you put it in there, they don't take it out. They just keep adding to it. And that is exactly, I get it. I'm not right all the time. I don't mean it like that. But this is one beautiful example where I kind of saw this early on and I was like, this is going to get ugly. And every time I see something like this, it's like I kind of clench up like, here we go again.
This doesn't bug the heck out of me like it does you. But what does bug the heck out of me around the same issue is when you have an app from them already installed, say you have Office 365, and then you get an ad saying, Office 365. I'm like, wait a minute, you must know I have this, right?
This is from the company that is touting their AI prowess, and they don't even know that me, who has signed into my Windows computer with the same account I use for Office 365, has Office 365. You're not violating my privacy, guys. That's just common sense. You should know that.
That annoys me more.
Yes. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, should we talk about the list of deprecated and removed features?
Yes. I will have to look at that list too because I don't remember.
Nothing dramatic.
Right?
No, in past years, remember Paint showed up about a year ago and everyone was like, oh my God. Yeah. You know, Paint is not.
I check every year
listed.
For Notepad. I do. That's not.
I don't think you have to worry about Notepad. I mean, maybe it comes to the store or something, but I think it's fine. So I think the only one in here as far as deprecated features is the snipping tool. A lot of people do use that. It's kind of popular. There's a new tool in this version of Windows called Snip and Sketch that is sort of a superset of snipping tools. So no worries there. And it can take over for the print screen type shortcuts, which is kind of cool. And then as far as stuff that's actually gone, nothing important. You know, the hologram app has been replaced with the mixed reality viewer. The phone companion app was a version ago replaced by the phone settings in the settings app. So it's no big deal. It just gave me a reason to use a picture of a pasture.
Got it.
Putting it out to pasture.
One day we'll all be out there.
We will.
And the Microsoft app, Microsoft Apps for Android has transitioned to your phone. Did we talk about that last week?
Yeah, so I don't remember.
So Apps for Android is now called Your Phone.
They just renamed it. And so obviously in Windows 10 now in 18.09, they have an app called Your Phone. It's been evolving over time. It will one day let you access your photos, your text messages, and your notifications on your PC. Super useful. Today it does 2/3 of those things. And so the way you used to connect your Android phone to your PC to make this work was the Microsoft Apps app, which was kind of a goofy way to do it. Now this functionality has become sort of the core point of the app. It makes the connection. And you can still go look at all the other Microsoft apps you can download on Android, but that's not really the point of it anymore. It used to be sort of like a mini store for Microsoft apps. You know, because you love Microsoft so much, you want to make sure you get, you know, collect them all. So now it's more about the phone thing. So I actually haven't even written about this, but the connection that's made now, if you're in Windows 10 and you say, yes, I would like to connect my phone, and it says, we're going to send your phone a text message and you're going to get this app. That app will now be the Your Phone app, which makes sense because you're coming from the Your Phone app on Windows 10.
Oh, so that whole Microsoft collection goes away or whatever that was called?
No, it's still, it's in there. It's just, it's like kind of a sub page in the app now. So that, and it, honestly, at this point, it was really just, it was almost just a name change.
Yeah.
It had kind of been evolving along those lines anyway.
I get confused because there was a thing called Companion, right?
Yep. There was the phone companion app. Yeah.
Phone companion. And then
don't
I thought.
Don't forget that, Mary Jo, that never happened. We're not talking about that. So, yeah.
It still shows up in the store, though, I think, right?
They're trying, Mary Jo.
I know. Okay.
You know, okay. Maybe in 1900, whatever they call it. One H or whatever the heck it is. I don't know.
Yes, that name. Yeah.
That new virus that's coming out next year.
Well, we're going to talk Surface and we're going to talk cloud and you guys have your tips and there's a lot more coming up. But before we get to all that, I want to talk about buying a house and I want to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for sponsoring this episode of Windows Weekly. Buying a house can be really an anxious time. Are interest rates going up? Are they going down? Do I have to buy quickly? Do I have to wait? There's a lot of questions. And Rocket Mortgage understood that, and that's why they created a new system that will help you if rates are fluctuating as much as they are right now. It is called the Power Buying Process, and here is how it works. Step one, answer a few simple questions, and then they'll check your credit for pre-qualified approval. Step two, Quicken Loans will verify your income, all your assets, and your credit. And this only takes about 24 hours. And then they will give you a verified approval. And that gives you the strength of a cash buyer. So once you're verified, then you get to step three. You qualify for their all new exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, they'll lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. So take your time. You've got time. Don't be anxious. You'll find the perfect house for you. Now, here's the best part. If rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also goes down. It drops. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. Our friends at Quicken Loans are really trying hard to make this process as easy as possible, just throwing technology at a problem that's been around since we've been buying houses. So check it out. If you don't believe me, go to their website, take a look, see for yourself. All you have to do is go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/windows. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. All right, Surface. There's a Surface event next month. We know for sure now.
Yep. October 2nd.
Yeah. So do you want to, why don't you, Mary Jo, if you don't mind, maybe refresh. Yeah.
Yeah. So October 2nd, New York City, starting at 4 p.m., there's going to be what Microsoft calls their fall event. And so we're pretty sure there are going to be new Surfaces there, but nothing brand new, more like refreshes of the Surface laptop. And the Surface Book. Is that right? Or is it Surface Pro?
No, Surface Pro.
We think the refreshes are going to be fairly minor to the hardware. We think they're going to get new 8th generation Intel processors and probably USB-C ports. We don't know if there'll be any other brand new Surface devices there, and we also are not sure if Microsoft will do a refresh on the Surface Studio at that time. I've heard some people say yes. I've heard some people say maybe not. But that event's going to be a bigger event. They're also going to talk about scenarios where they show how you can save time across your home life and work life. And it's going to be a very productivity-focused event, we think. They have this thing they call Modern Life Services internally, and it's the whole idea of helping people use things like OneNote and To-Do and Cortana and various products that they already have in the Microsoft pipeline to save time and be more efficient. And so I think that's going to be kind of the flavor of it more than just a big Surface hardware announcement. So that's what we are thinking is going to happen on October 2nd. And Microsoft's not really saying, of course, because they want to have some fun.
Sure. event. So since then, Brad and now I have viewed images of the devices. And one of the things that's interesting is that both Surface Pro, although actually I've not seen this in Surface Pro, but both Surface Pro and Surface Laptop allegedly are coming in black. And for Surface Laptop, that's only interesting because the Surface Laptop's already offered in different colors. Black is not one of them. And so now black will be one of them. I think they're getting rid of the gold version and will still make the other versions. And then, of course, Surface Pro hasn't been available in black since Surface Pro 2. And one of the big issues with the first two generations of Surface Pro, which I believe were still magnesium devices. Remember, Surface Laptop is aluminum, and so they can anodize it. It's easier to do the colors. It's the reason why Apple's doing that on the iPhone XR. You can use aluminum colors. You know, you can have more colors. Those devices, the Surface Pro and Surface Pro 2, were very prone to scratching. In fact, even if you didn't think your device was scratched, if you brought a magnifying glass up and looked at it, it actually has micro scratches all over it. It's probably too far along now for anyone to worry about that, but at the time, it was very concerning. And I believe it's the real reason that Microsoft went with natural magnesium for Surface Pro 3 and Surface 2, which was the second ARM-based device they did. Is because when you scratch a device like that, what you're scratching is the actual color of the material. So there's still a scratch, but it's not as visible because you're not seeing the real color underneath like you would on an aluminum device. So I don't know how they're going to address that.
Do you remember when I got the Surface Laptop loaner? I'm actually not that hard on my devices, but I had scratched the heck out of that in like a few days. And because it was burgundy, you could see silver, right?
Which is the actual color of the aluminum underneath. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if they've changed that. They have.
I'm curious. Well, I bet they haven't on Surface Laptop, honestly.
Okay.
So I don't know how this is going to work. I mean, obviously, you can always come up with new processes for making this more efficient, but you're essentially laying paint on top of a surface, and you can gouge it, and you can see that kind of stuff. So, we'll see. But now, the issue, and I viewed this. I mean, you would assume, and you should assume, that these devices will have USB-C. However, when you look at the device shots that I saw, for example, it looks like it's the same port alignment that we saw in the original devices that we see today, meaning a full-size USB 3 port and then like a mini display port for video out. It's possible that these materials that I viewed were just meant to show off the colors, and they were using existing product shots and just colorize the black one to make it look black, whatever. But I can't imagine. Can you imagine?
I can't imagine them not doing it. No.
It just makes no sense. No. So, and actually, I'm sorry, Surface Pro. Did the 2017 Surface Pro have a USB-C port?
No, right?
Or is it just... No,
but the Surface Go does.
Surface Go does, and Surface Book 2 does. Yeah. So... Yeah. We'll see what happens. But so it's good news and potentially bad news. But I don't think they're going to screw that up.
So no,
I have banged my head on the desk so many times because of Microsoft. I cannot imagine. This would just be the dumbest one yet.
So no Surface phone and no Surface watch is what you're telling me.
No.
No, there will be no. I don't expect new form factors.
Although, as you said, it's not a form factor, but I keep hearing about this headset thing too, being part of this. So some kind of a Jabra-like headset, which I think they're going to not market as like necessarily for call centers, but more like for home use almost, like some kind of productivity thing. So that'll be interesting to see what that is.
Yeah, I would say peripherals get a pass. That one in particular is really interesting. But even back at the Surface Go launch, you know, what the private thing they did where we all kind of came in individually, they had a range of mice and they had the new colors with the pens and everything. And, that's fine. They could last year's Surface Book 2 event, which we expect to be the model for this one, where they had the Windows 10 stuff as well. Remember, they had that new performance or professional mouse, whatever it was called, the new Surface mouse, I don't have it right here, but the one that's sort of ergonomic, which was out in the pavilion area, but they never discussed it, or Panos never talked about it when he was talking about the new devices. So, I obviously we're going to keep an eye out for new peripherals. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some other stuff as well on that.
I've seen a couple of people saying there's going to be a new Surface Dial, possibly transparent.
Come with a soap on a rope kind of thing, like a little rope so you can hang it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if they do a new dial, that would make more sense if there is a new Surface Studio, right? I mean, that would be kind of an interesting pairing there. So,
right.
All the Surfaces have audio jacks, right?
The normal head.
What if it's a new Bluetooth headset and then they take away the audio?
I don't see Microsoft taking away the headphone jack on a computer.
I don't think they should either.
Yeah, these things do double duty now. Remember, the computers used to have the two ports that looked identical, but one was for a microphone and one was for the headphone. And now the headphone jack can do two direction for those headsets that support that. And then obviously a lot of people use USB for audio as well, or for headsets.
So now it's time for the buzzword section, AI, mixed reality. You're not going to believe hear next.
Well, you guys are doing this. I'm going to be reading my tiny book about Google. Look at this thing.
What is that?
It's a little book. Look, it's a little book.
Where did you get it? Is it for writing notes?
Where did you get this thing?
No, it came with my new dongle. This cute little book about Google.
Are you doing a review? Dongle review?
No, I don't. I think I don't think I have much new to say.
You did a review of the Pen Loop. Hey,
that's true. And I did do a review of the original dongle.
How much does that dongle cost?
I think it's $16 ish, maybe, or 12 or 16, 12.
And it's USB-C to headphone jack.
Yeah, the other one had a problem where you would plug it in, it would make a big popping sound, and if you manually selected between tracks, it would make a popping sound. And this one actually seems to solve that. So. There is that, I guess. Sorry, I didn't mean to hijack the AI thing. I'm sure it's...
You step all over my buzzwords. AI, mixed reality, woo!
He thinks he's going to be bored, but guys, I've got news for you. Dynamics 365 is now like one of the new, most buzzword-laden products at Microsoft. So listen up about what's new.
Okay.
So first, for people on the podcast who don't know what Dynamics 365 is, I don't know what rock you're living under, but... It is Microsoft CRM and ERP product line. So if you know what Salesforce does and you know what SAP does, this is what Microsoft does too. CRM, ERP, they have on-premises versions and they have cloud versions. So Dynamics 365 is a super complicated set of products. There are a ton of moving pieces. And the way Microsoft has re-architected this is they've broken these all up into separate modules instead of just selling them as a suite only. So there's a whole laundry list of what's included in here, which I'm not going to go over. But this week, they made some news about Dynamics 365 on two fronts. So first on AI, they already had said that as part of the big October update to Dynamics that's coming, they're going to have a thing called Dynamics 365 AI for Sales. This is a new app. You know, just think about what salespeople want, add some AI, stir it around. There you go. AI for sales. Yesterday, they said there's two other AI apps, which we didn't know existed before. So one is called AI for Customer Service. One is called AI for Market Insights. So again, they take these kind of mundane functions that people do in the CRM and ERP world, and they're trying to bring new kinds of advanced technologies to them to make it easier for people to do their jobs, help them do predictive kinds of things instead of just always being reactive. You know, with the insights, they're basically aiming at marketing teams who want to make more informed decisions, but it's hard for them to pull the insights out of the data. So they're going to kind of predictively give you insights that might be helpful to what you're doing. Okay, so there's the AI part. This is all going to start rolling out in October, because just like everything else at Microsoft these days, they're on a twice yearly schedule. So there's a March update for them, actually April update and October update for Dynamics. The other thing that a lot of people get super excited about that Microsoft talked about this week for Dynamics is actually old news, but I'll reiterate it for people who may have missed out. Remember at Build, Microsoft showed off two new apps for the HoloLens. One was called Remote Assist, which was a hands-free calling type app. And the other was called Layout, which is a hands-free spatial design app. So we've already seen these. They've demoed them. They've talked about them several times since. What many people didn't realize is they took those two things when they did the big reorg at Microsoft this year, and they moved those to the Dynamics team. The thinking is, we want to find places where HoloLens and mixed reality are going to be able to make money, not just in these more amorphous things like, you know, oh, it'll be fun to let people exist in a 3D space and walk around in this place. No, they want to make money off this. So the way they're going to do this is they're repositioning these things, the content for HoloLens and mixed reality, as more aimed at first-line workers and people who do what Dynamics does. You know, people who are in the field, who are repairing elevators, who are looking at inventory and trying to make informed decisions. So they took these two apps, rebranded them as Dynamics 365. So now they're called Dynamics 365 Remote Assist and Dynamics 365 Layout. And they're going to start introducing these as part of the October update of Dynamics 365. So a lot of people, it's funny, I was watching the coverage this week. A lot of people either had never seen these demoed before, or they didn't realize they had been moved over to being more applicable to the business world. And they were covering them as brand new things that came out of nowhere. And wow, aren't these great? Don't get me wrong. I think Microsoft's doing the right thing with these apps. I feel like they got way off track when they were trying to make HoloLens and mixed reality just a consumer and gaming thing. Because when HoloLens first came out, if you remember, Satya Nadella went to the team and said, this cannot just be a gaming and consumer thing. It should be a business thing too. Then they kind of got away from that when they were doing Windows 10 creators update stuff. And they started talking about, you know, 3D for everyone, that whole thing, you know, where they showed them demoing a sandcastle on a phone being built and you can make 3D models.
Or remember playing that? Minecraft in your living room. That's right. What I remember. All I remember is playing Minecraft in your living room.
The Minecraft thing was pretty cool.
Yeah.
No, they don't get me wrong. These things were cool too, but they were never going to make money off these. And they are going to make probably a lot of money off repositioning this as a first-line worker thing. I think for companies who are like, oh, wow, that would be really handy if my person who's repairing an elevator doesn't have to call somebody on a phone or look up something in a giant manual, and they could just have the instructions appear in their field of vision while they're wearing this headset. This would save me a lot of time. I think they're going the right way, and that's... it's now part of the Dynamics family. So see, Paul, you might want to start covering Dynamics.
So I have this Call of Duty tip I'd like to share. No.
yeah. So what was it when they first, I mean, it was first at, was it Build in 2015 when they first announced it?
Announced HoloLens?
Yeah.
HoloLens. That was a separate event, right?
I thought it was January 2015 when they did the
It was January.
They did the Windows 10 event, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Was it?
Yeah, I think it was January. Yeah, 2015, and then so what was there? I think so too, because I think I just started back at Twit then, were they just trying to be flashy, or were there people that really believed that kids would be playing Minecraft in their living room?
Oh, there are people who really believe. Let's be very clear about that.
They never actually said that they were going to make a consumer version of the HoloLens. And they did make a business version, but then they came out with this idea of the mixed reality headsets. And it was like, oh, so maybe that's going to be the quote budget play for consumers, not having a low cost HoloLens for everyday people, but making HoloLens more of a business tool. Right. But I think Alex Kipman and some of the people who are kind of the visionaries behind HoloLens were thinking, no, but we want it to be for everyone, right? Like we want it to be in the wild. We want everyday people and consumers to be using this.
Sure.
It's never realistic, right?
No, this has happened a lot to Microsoft. You know, AR and to a lesser degree, VR have kind of taken off with consumers. But on mobile, where it makes more sense, you know, and I always use that museum example. You're a kid, you go to a dinosaur, you know, a natural history museum is a dinosaur skeleton, and you can hold up your phone or your iPad or whatever. And as you move it over the skeleton, maybe one of the things you can see is what that dinosaur looked like when it was alive. And that kind of thing is neat. It's not something you might use every day, but it makes more sense than a big clunky headset that is either tethered to a computer like Windows Mixed Reality is, or a big clunky headset that's standalone but only has an hour of battery life and has to be used in a particular room because you need to map it and you can't just go out in the world with it. I mean, I think the difference between the mobile stuff and what Microsoft has done primarily is that Microsoft stuff does make sense for businesses. And the consumer stuff makes more, you know, the Apple or, you know, Samsung VR, whatever those solutions are, there's tons of them now. Makes more sense, you know, out in the world, you know, the Pokemon Go kind of example or whatever. So I don't know, you know, I for all the criticism I had of HoloLens, you know, the central kind of awesomeness of it was how AR objects, like which they called holograms terribly, would kind of really latch onto a surface and you could kind of walk around it and it maintained, it was so still on that surface, whether it was a wall or a floor or whatever, that it made it seem like it was there, and it tricked your brain. It's a central kind of genius to it. But I got to be honest, I've seen mobile AR examples that are almost as good, and I think it's just kind of past, you know, for the consumer space. You're not taking this one back. There's no version of a Microsoft headset that you can wear out in the world that makes any sense when you can just use it on your phone when you sometimes want or you want to use it.
You know what's going to be really interesting? So we think the next HoloLens comes next year, sometime in 2019. And I'm really interested to see how they position it. If they come out of the gate like this is a business device, or if they come back and say, okay, we think we can make this a consumer and business device.
Yeah, I think the former makes more sense.
I think the former too.
Yeah, and one of the things that they can legitimately do is say, look, here are some wins that we've had for certain companies and certain you can call them verticals, whatever. I think it was last year sometime they used, probably was Ignite last year, they used Ford Motor and how they were using HoloLens and Windows Mixed Reality to design cars. Where in the past, what you had to do was carve these giant, they still do this all the time, but they carve giant fake cars out of clay because it gives you a way to kind of look around it in 3D and see how all the angles line up and everything. Now you can design this thing digitally. And the person doing that is going to use a HoloLens. But when you want to bring in the rest of the team just to kind of look at it and give me some feedback, they can put on the Windows Mixed Reality headset, which is a lot cheaper, and get that same kind of 3D realistic view of the vehicle in progress. So yeah, I think that makes sense.
Me too. Chevron, I think, was the one they were showing this week and how they're using it throughout their organization. So
and I bet
they have dozens of
use cases. You know, like you and I have talked a lot about Windows 10S, and one of the things I've said is there is no example of a company or a school district or whatever it is successfully deploying this thing and seeing better results with it. Like they just don't have that. They need those things. Right? This is how Microsoft sells more and more customers on it. HoloLens, for whatever anyone thinks of it, they do have these examples. There are, in fact, companies out in the world using this thing. So it's not going to sell in the millions of units, but maybe that, you know, maybe it doesn't have to. That's not really the point. It's not that kind of product.
So the other cloud news, Microsoft is bringing Cosmos DB to Azure Stack and Azure Sphere.
Isn't it like, time for Cosmos DB too or something? Or?
So this is kind of your preview of Ignite buzzword bingo. I got to say, I don't know if this will be an announcement at Ignite next week or not, but all these three terms in this sentence, Cosmos DB, Azure Stack, and Azure Sphere, these terms are all going to figure very big next week in whatever Microsoft does, because you can look at the session list for Ignite and see these come up a lot. So a quick refresher. Cosmos DB is Microsoft's NoSQL database. They always talk about it being a planet-scale NoSQL database. Azure Stack is their hybrid computing platform. It's basically a kind of like a version of Azure that runs on certain servers that are pre-configured to run it, and you can run it in your own data center instead of Microsoft running it in its data center. Azure Sphere is that Linux-based microcontroller that Microsoft had talked about a few months ago, where they're building a service to make things secure if you want to deploy things at the edge. So you know that whole thing we talk about here all the time, intelligent cloud, intelligent edge. This story is the epitome of that. It's got everything in, about the cloud, the edge, and the intelligence all in here. So the way I found out about this, Cosmos DB coming to Azure Stack and Azure Sphere, was in a conference call that Microsoft had. The executive VP of sales for all of Microsoft, his name is Judson Althoff. He was speaking at a Citi conference, and he just kind of threw this out there like, yeah, this is going to happen. And when I first heard it, I thought, wait a minute, how can they bring Cosmos DB, which is running on Azure, to first this planetary scale database, to Azure Stack? Okay, I can kind of see that. But Azure Sphere, like this little tiny microcontroller that's going to be embedded in devices on the edge. But he said that very plainly, like it's coming. He didn't give us a date when. But it kind of shows you Microsoft's whole value proposition and where they're going with this story. They're trying to make everything that they do in the cloud available also right out to the edge. And this is going to be a prevalent theme for them with every product, including HoloLens. You know, they've already said, we're going to put an AI processor in the next HoloLens so that you can do processing on the edge. I think this is just going to keep coming up more and more, and it's going to be a major theme. So remember, if you have your buzzword bingo cards for Ignite next week, I would put these three words on it. Cosmos DB, Azure Stack, Azure Sphere.
Yep. Yep.
What do we
Would you put Windows 10 on that bingo board, Mary Jo?
I'm not sure I would. Would you?
No. Well, yeah, so we never really did we're not really doing an Ignite preview per se, but I think the current messaging on Windows 10 continues, which is just that it's an ingredient in this other thing that IT is supposed to care about a lot, which is Microsoft 365. And I'm sure there'll be some Windows stuff, but in the scope of top level announcements and the types of products and services they're going to discuss, I don't think Windows 10 plays a role at all.
I mean, when you look in the session builder and you put Windows 10 in as a term, tons of sessions come up. Like there might be more than 100, but if you look and you drill down, it's like, oh, they're talking more about like management of Windows 10, or they're talking about, you know, Windows 10 as part of Microsoft 365. It's not really like we're going to learn a lot of new things about Windows 10 probably, right?
You know, this is what an awful quickness that this has occurred in, but we used to do that kind of Windows Phone drinking game thing where it's like a Microsoft keynote. And if they actually mention Windows Phone, you have to take a drink. Windows 10 has become, it's weird because it's used by so many people, but it has become to Microsoft like this thing they're almost embarrassed to talk about. You know, it's a little strange.
Yeah.
All right. Is it time for the tips of the week? Or did you want to do is that enough of an Ignite preview?
Yeah, Ignite kicks off on Monday, and we'll have a lot of things next week to talk about on the show about Ignite.
So you'll just talk about them. You won't talk about what you're going to talk about. You'll talk about them, then next week after that, you'll talk about what you talked about.
Exactly.
A lot of talking.
You know how this show works.
All right, then tip of the week.
Yeah, Google announced recently that they were killing Inbox, and they can roast in hell for all of eternity for that, because Inbox is the perfect email client. Ooh. And I use it on mobile and my desktop. I use it on, in mobile in app form, and I use it on my desktop in web form. So I have 6 months, and so I've started investigating other email solutions. So there's all kinds of ways to go with this. could stick with Gmail, which I hate. I could, you know, whatever. So I, one of the top contenders is obviously the Microsoft stuff. I really like Outlook.com and Outlook Mobile quite a bit. And I, that's what I've been using for the past week. But in the process of making this switch, just for testing purposes, right, I sort of encountered something I haven't thought about in a while, because at some point years ago, literally, like when I moved to Therat.com and started using paul@therat.com as my primary email address, that's a G Suite account, so it's a Gmail account. I have other accounts that collect email and get things like newsletters, or people write them, write to those places or whatever. And so at that time, you know, 3+ years ago, I kind of investigated, well, what's the best way to get all of that email in one place, be able to send email from all those other accounts from the one place? And, you know, there's different ways to do it. And so now that I'm looking at this again, I've actually run into this thing, which I frankly have not thought about for over 3 years, which is this. Let's just pretend you have two email accounts to make it super simple, and it's Gmail and Hotmail, right? So you've decided you're going to use one or the other. It doesn't matter which. And you want to collect the email from the second email account at the first one, and you want to be able to send email as that account from the first one, you know, send and respond to email from the second account from the first account. There's two ways you can do this, right? You can literally pull email from the one you want to use. That's so hard to even explain this. I'm sorry. Let me use Outlook.com and Gmail, and may just use the service names because it's too hard to do this otherwise. I'm going to use Outlook.com. I want to collect email from Gmail. I want to be able to send email as Gmail from Outlook.com. How do you do that? Outlook.com has stuff built into it. In fact, in the new version, there's a new interface for this, and it lets you connect specifically to a Gmail account. I thought that was kind of cool at first, but it uses IMAP technology, which isn't super old-fashioned and is its own form of push-pull. It's technically push, I guess, but no, I guess it's not. I guess it's technically pull, but it allows you to collect email as it comes in, and that's one way to do it. But you can also forward email from Gmail, and I'm experimenting with which one of those is faster, because my theory is that if you forward email from Gmail, it will be forwarded the second it comes in, and that IMAP will pull on some kind of a schedule and you can't configure it. And so I believe that that's correct, and that's something I've been kind of, again, I'm experimenting on. But if you're going to consolidate email, you need to kind of look into this stuff. And this is the hidden complexity of it. If you think about an application like Windows Mail in Windows 10, which is I think is a terrible app, but people use it. When you connect that to a Gmail account, you're using IMAP. And one of the things you'll notice with that app is that it's continually behind. In fact, when I open my start menu now and I can see the tile for mail, it's flipping through email messages, including your one today, Megan, by the way, about the glass thing, which are gone. They've been archived already, but this thing hasn't caught up. And this is actually, it's kind of a goofy thing to have to even worry about. I wish this was more sophisticated. I wish there was kind of a shared email technology that happened under the scenes that everyone used, and it just kind of worked and it was true push or whatever, pull or whatever. But I don't believe that exists. Anyway, I believe that it is faster and more efficient to forward email and then just to configure the new account to be able to send mail as that account, which you can do separately. So that's what I've been doing. I believe it's better. This is super complicated. It's really hard to discuss like this. Mm-hmm. It's kind of easier maybe to write and give the examples. But I believe after doing this for a week, both ways, I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's more efficient to do this by forwarding your email to the new account. So there's your tip.
Did they say why they discontinued it?
They were just testing it. They were using it as a testing.
Yeah. Was it really just testing it?
Yeah,
yeah, for Gmail. 5 years. Wow. So, yeah. Or 4 years.
I know. Like, I'm like, wait, it was multiple years, right?
Yeah.
Thing is, you know, to be slightly fair to Google, it is possible to go into Gmail and make it simpler looking. There's a lot of extraneous UI in the web client, and you can get rid of a lot of it, but not all of it. For example, I'll bring up calendar because you can see it there. There's this sidebar that appears in Gmail and in Google Calendar now. It has icons for Google Keep and Google Tasks, and then there's a button to get more add-ons. You can't remove that thing. It's just like this column that appears over there. And I just, I don't understand the complexity. I my theory is that Gmail or Google, in their manic bid to be Microsoft, is trying to make this thing as complex as Outlook. And congratulations, guys, you did it, because I don't want to use it anymore, just like I don't want to use Outlook. And by Outlook, I mean the real Outlook client, like Outlook 2016. Slight irony side note, by the way, I'm also testing Outlook 2016. And as it turns out, if you're on the Insider program, the version of Office that's coming out soon has the simplified ribbon. And you can actually take this big pig of a program and kind of make it look kind of streamlined. It's actually not 100% terrible, other than Outlook is hiding beneath the scenes like a ghost in a horror movie. But you can make it look pretty good. It's kind of interesting. Like, you can actually make Outlook 2016 look cleaner than Gmail, which, by the way, is a sentence no one should ever be able to utter, but it's true. I always thought they were going to keep Inbox because it was better, because it is better. It's cleaner. It's simpler. Mm. It's not overloaded with crap. My advice to Google that they will never listen to is use Inbox for consumers and keep Gmail for G Suite. And let them decide, those companies, if they're going to let people use Inbox as an option. This thing is too much. And here's just Outlook.com, the default UI. I actually do work to make that app, that web app, look simpler, because you can do that too. In fact, you can make it look much like Google Inbox. But the default view of that thing, and that's the picture you're showing now, is Outlook.com looking like Gmail, Inbox rather. Is beautiful and clean, and the iconography and the you know, the text style and everything, it's beautiful. Like, it's actually a really nice looking app. And Google, I don't know what's going on over there, but they have we have something beautiful and something ugly. Which one do you guys want to go with? You know, we're going to go with the ugly one. I don't get it.
The other thing that is it implies that they're done experimenting. You know, that there's no other features for Inbox. Yeah. You know, we tried Smart Replies. Yeah. That's where we tested Smart Replies. That's where we tested this and that. And I said, okay, so they're done? Email's perfect? Like, no, it's not. Keep testing.
Oh, no, it's terrible. That's the thing. In Inbox, the central beauty of it was not Smart Replies. It wasn't the ability of this thing to collect, you know, flight information and trip stuff into like a little box that was all together. I actually found that kind of annoying, and you can turn it off. It was just the inherent simplicity of the whole thing. Like, it's like we learn these lessons from these little parts. You didn't learn the lesson from this. What you should have learned is that this is beautiful and works. Mm-hmm. Inbox is the type of thing Apple would make. Gmail today is the type of thing Microsoft would make. And
except for the fact that Apple Mail is garbage.
Terrible. So. Well, and because Apple Mail predates Apple, right? It's from Next. And it was, you know, it was just, it's... I've never liked Apple Mail either, but for whatever it's worth, like, Apple Mail falls in this category too. Gmail does, the Microsoft sub does. There's something about when you take these things and you put them on mobile, and what you can't have is a multi-pane view anymore. They become elegant and useful and beautiful. And, you know, Gmail benefits from this on mobile. Apple Mail does as well. It's like, you know, forced to be simple, it becomes something good. Like, just do that everywhere. I mean, why would you make it? I don't know. I just don't understand it. It's too bad.
Well, email is so personal. I feel like start a new business, it would be like an email life coach, where I would be with people and say, what do you want from your email? What's your, you know, do you love smart replies, or do you like a clean design, or do you like to push or pull? That's what we would talk about in our meeting, Paul.
Well, okay. So
and then give them one thing that is right for them.
There is a, that my original advice to Google when I first found out about this was, you got to make something that looks like Gmail a mode. I'm sorry, that looks like Inbox a mode of Gmail. If you just do that, I'll shut up and go away. and you need that kind of choice, right? So I mentioned Outlook 2016. They're getting the simplified ribbon, which makes way more sense for that application than that big, heavy, top-heavy ribbon they had before. And you can cut that. You can turn off the folder list. You can kind of turn off all the surrounding UI. And turn this thing into something that is super elegant and simple to use, and would even a normal consumer, like, who doesn't know anything about technology, would probably have no problem with this thing. Doing that doesn't mean that those features are not available for the power users that need or want that stuff, right? It's kind of the best approach. Like, what you just said is what Microsoft does on Outlook 2016. It does to some degree on Outlook.com. And Google is not doing on Gmail/, you know, they had two different things. You want simple, it's inbox. You want full of crap, but it's super powerful, you have Gmail. And if you're only going to have one, you got to make it something you can change so that it's good for everybody.
So now Mary Jo and I can go drink beer while you talk about Forza 4 or 3.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. I do have a little Xbox thing in here. Yeah. So this is pretty quick. Although, yeah, this is pretty quick. Microsoft, they revealed this in, I don't know if it was August or July or whenever, but they said that they were going to start bringing Microsoft Studio games to other stores. You know, today the new games are all available only through the Microsoft store. And I think all of them are Xbox One and Windows 10. So some of those games are actually making their way to Steam, which is the big online store for games on the PC, and also I think on Mac and Linux, and also to PC retail, meaning in disc form, right, for the first time. And so ReCore, which is a AAA title, Super Lucky's Tale, which is actually an awesome game, and then some silly children's games that we'll just skip over. But it's kind of interesting because these games were all pretty big for Microsoft, and the fact that they're bringing them to other stores is something that hasn't happened in a long time. And hopefully this will shut up Tim Sweeney for a couple of days, the guy from from Epic Games who never stops complaining about Microsoft. So the other thing is Microsoft released, this is kind of a side thing, Forza Horizon 4 is now complete and will be released. I can't remember the exact date, but I think it's early next month. You can pre-order it now. And then I just also threw in a link because Mehdi had written, I'm going to get this right, it's a $99 bundle that is available now through the end of the month, which is not for the new Forza Horizon 4, but for Forza Horizon 3 plus Xbox Game Pass and Forza Motorsport 7. Is now 1 year of Xbox Game Pass is now available for $99. So you basically get those two Forza games for free if you already want to pay for Xbox Game Pass. So that's available for the next week, 10 days, whatever, and then that's going away. So that might be appealing to you Forza fans in the audience as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. What? Let's see. And we talked about the deal, the Enterprise Pick of the Week.
The Enterprise Pick of the Week is something that Microsoft hasn't done in a while. They made public the postmortem on their big cloud outage on September 4th. So usually when they have cloud outages, sometimes they'll post something somewhere, like it's kind of hidden. The only team that is pretty consistent lately in doing these postmortems in a public way is the VSTS team. But because the September 4th cloud outage that hit Microsoft, we talked about it on Windows Weekly. They had a lightning strike near the South Central U.S. data center. And it wreaked absolute havoc on not just people who were using that data center, but across the globe. So what Microsoft did was on the Azure history page on their website, they did a postmortem. I think it was this week or late last week. And this thing, to read this thing, it's amazing about what happened. It was like the worst case scenario of everything that could possibly have happened. So first, there's a lightning strike. The lightning strike causes them to lose power. Then, because it's a data center, the data center's cooling system shuts down. But then because they tried to fail over and use a generator to have backup power and that failed, the data center shut itself down, and some of the networking equipment and the servers were actually broken by them shutting down so abruptly, I guess. The whole thing is amazing. Like when you read it, it's like the worst possible confluence of every major horrible event happening at once. And a lot of people after this said to me, okay, I get it. Lightning strike, you can't control that. But why didn't they fail over their own data center? And this was one of the most interesting things in the write-up. They said the decision was made to work towards recovery of data and not fail over to another data center, since a failover would have resulted in limited data loss due to the asynchronous nature of geo-replication. So they basically admit their failover thing wasn't really architected to work. What do you need to know if you are among the many people who were impacted around September 4th, 5th, and beyond. First, you're going to get a credit, which is good news. People who are impacted will be getting a credit, they said, based on their Microsoft Azure service level agreement. So that's good. The second thing is they're doing a lot of additional investigation into why everything went wrong and what happened. And they're going to be basically re-architecting their own policies about what to do if something like this occurs in the future. So kudos to Microsoft for making that public. I think it was the right thing to do, another right thing to do. So, yay. That's your enterprise pick. And that was a cat's tail just flashing before my face.
So I don't know why we weren't calling it MWAS instead of MMD. MWAS. Sounds MWAS. MWAS.
Sounds more like morass.
Yeah. Yeah, which is
maybe that's why they didn't call it that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the thing we talked about at the start of the show, Microsoft Managed Desktop, it actually had a code name. The code name was Modern Workplace as a Service, MWAS. Probably good they didn't use that name. When I talked to Bill Karagiannis, he said, we wanted more of a grown-up name, which is probably a good idea. Plus, I don't think a lot of people understand Microsoft's use of Modern Workplace. I know Microsoft understands that terminology, but I don't think a lot of other people do. The most interesting thing was I found other companies, like especially in Australia, a number of resellers who are using this Modern Workplace as a Service as something they actively go out and sell right now. So even though it was the code name for Microsoft Managed Desktop, it also is a current name that some people are using to sell this very concept, this whole idea of, you know, buying from a company a PC, having them provision it, and then keeping it up to date for you. So kind of interesting that some people actually took that term and built a business around it. So MWAS is the code name of the week.
MWAS.
MWAS.
It just sounds really bad.
It does. It wouldn't have been a good code name, a good final name for sure.
Cigar City Maduro Brown sounds much better, which is your beer pick.
It does. Yeah, I was thinking I should do a Florida beer pick because we're going to Orlando next week. And there aren't that many great craft breweries in Orlando, but there are a lot of good craft breweries in Florida. Cigar City is in Tampa. They make a lot of amazing beer. So if you're at Ignite next week and you're looking for a Florida beer pick, I would say anything from Cigar City. If you like a milder brown style ale, like an English brown, I would say try the Maduro Brown if you see it anywhere. English style brown is like a little bit coffee, a little bit toffee, a little bit chocolate, very light, easy drinking, even though it's a brown ale. Definitely worth a try.
All right, let's have a whole section devoted to the events coming up.
Yes.
Oh, real quick though, Dinah Swart, and I apologize if I'm butchering your name, but he told me on Twitter that you can, in fact, remove that add-on sidebar thing in the Gmail web interface. There's a little arrow down in the bottom.
Were you talking about the one on the right or the left?
Yeah, the one on the right.
Oh, I thought, yeah, you can remove that. Because it's in docs and it's in everywhere.
That's the worst.
It's everywhere.
Yeah,
sorry. I thought.
But I want to see it as nowhere. But anyway.
I want to remove I want the left side. The left side is the part that to me that's so cluttered. And I want it.
So you can collapse it, right?
Yeah.
And And when I tested this, I went and I got rid of it. It has all these weird superfluous folders in there that must have been added by email clients over the years. So I kind of trimmed it down to what has to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But right. I'd like to not see it.
Right.
I agree.
Sorry. Scooter X in the chat room also said that. Yeah. You just click on the little bottom right hand to get rid of that.
Unlike every other UI in the system, for some reason, that one has a... Whatever. It's okay. Well, I'm just glad it's there.
Teach his own, but I like Mailbox, but it doesn't work on Windows. Airmail, not Mailbox. Airmail.
Airmail.
Which might have been called Mailbox at some point. And I like Edison.
I've never heard of Edison.
Edison
is looking at other things too.
Edison is not on the desktop. It's only, but it's on Android or iOS. But again, everybody has their own preferences. I'm thinking this email life coach really could be my future career.
I think it's a job somebody should be doing.
Yeah. Right. It's like a lot of active listening. It sounds to me, Paul, like you're frustrated.
Mm-hmm. It's right. Like you're using lots of negative words when you describe this thing.
You sound a little overwhelmed with the choices.
You could use some AI sentiment analysis and work that in there.
Right. I'm going to get called by Future Crimes from a Minority Report because I'm so mad at Google for inputs.
Yeah. All right. So we have some events that we've talked about, but we should talk about them again because that's what this show does. Talks about stuff and talks about it again. Ignite broadcasting live next Tuesday. Correct.
There you go. Good night, everybody.
Tuesday instead of Wednesday first. So next week, Windows Weekly is on Tuesday.
Same time?
Same time, 2 to 4.
Okay.
And
same channel.
But if you're at Ignite and you want to come and be in the audience and ask some questions live, and we might have some guests, who knows, you have to just find us in the podcast area. We're in the main, I think, Channel 9 podcast booth for this. Is that right, Paul?
It's the podcast studio.
Okay, podcast studio.
Name of it. Yeah.
But there's quite a bit of room for a live audience, we hear. So they've got a whole setup for people, so you'll be able to hear if you're sitting in the audience and all. So you can join us. You don't need to RSVP, but be early.
I don't know if it's in here. Yeah, so it's in West Hall C. Okay. Here at the convention center. I think it's the Orange County Convention Center. Is that right? Orange County? Whatever. The convention center that's in Orlando. It's the only one that's humongous. It looks like a spaceship. West Hall C is where this is. Also, Brad and I are doing First Ring Daily there earlier that day at 12:30. Nice. And we're doing First Ring Daily Monday in what's called the podcast pop-up, which is like a terrarium that's in the middle of West Hall C. You can mill around it. You could probably hit something and they'll dunk us in water. I don't quite understand.
All right, I'm coming to that now.
Yeah. So there's that.
Is it like a biome sort of? Like you can.
I think so. It's like me and Pauly Shore are going to be in there. Yeah. I don't. Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Good. And then the meetup afterwards.
So, yeah. Right. So, what's the deal with that?
We're keeping our meetup at the Copper Canyon Grill, which is not that far from the convention center. It's 2 hours, 4:30 to 6:30 on Tuesday. So we're going to come right after Windows Weekly is over. We might be a little bit late, but you don't need to RSVP. This is a restaurant with a bar area, so you can have food in there. And we're just going to kind of corral around the bar and some tables and hang out and chat for a couple hours. No RSVP, just show up.
Yeah, it could be crowded, I guess. We don't have too much of an area.
Yeah.
But Florida's not hot, so this should be good.
This should be easy.
Well, unfortunately, the problem with this is we have to leave right after this.
I know.
Because we have a private event we have to go to as well that night. So we'll be there. How long are we there? 2 hours or an hour and a half?
2 hours. Two hours.
Okay. So we'll be there for the duration.
We will.
And then October 17th, more micro warehouse cloud camp.
Yes. If you're in Dublin, October 17th, and you're interested in stuff like infrastructure as a service on the cloud or platform as a service or Windows Server 2019 or hybrid, go to the Micro Warehouse Cloud Camp. It's a one-day event in Dublin that is, you have to purchase a ticket for, but if you purchase a ticket for it, we're doing Windows Weekly Live there and we're doing a meetup and we're even keynoting. Paul and I are going to keynote and say some stuff at the end of it.
We're going to say some stuff. Probably with a glass of Irish whiskey in hand. So who can say how this will go?
True.
Before we go, I wanted to point out my logo.
I noticed that it improved over the course of the show.
Yes, it has.
Nice work.
I think it. Yeah. Thanks, John.
That's actually pretty cool.
Fancy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. this is the Fast Ring that I'm on right now. It's working great.
The one without the ads for Microsoft Edge.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
The Paul Theron edition.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Windows Weekly records every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, but Leo will be back next week, so it may be another time.
Will he?
He will allegedly be back. If he's not, I'm back, but next week won't be Wednesday anyway. It'll be Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, as we said. And Mary Jo, where can people find you and all the great, wonderful things you do, writing, the things you get to do alone in your own room with your
my
cat,
dark as cavern,
as you always hoped your life would be.
In your lair, as I call it.
In my lair with my cat, yeah. They can find me on the internet at allaboutmicrosoft.com or on Twitter at Mary Jo Foley.
And Paul, when you're alone in your room, like you always wished you would be, what are you creating?
I am also on the internet. What am I creating? I don't know. Words, mostly hateful words. Terrible, terrible words. I'm at Therat.com and then Twitter at Therat as well.
Well, thank you both. And thank you for watching this show. And you can subscribe, obviously, or watch live. And we hope you do one or the other, or even both. And I am Megan Maroney, and hopefully Leo will be back next week.